Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne. My name's Taylor Payne and this is The Athletic's only dedicated Newcastle United podcast. It's lovely to be back here with George Corkin and Chris Woff. How the devil are you, George?
I'm okay. That throws up the notion that The Athletic may be considering setting up a rival Newcastle podcast, like the only dedicated Newcastle podcast. What if there were rivals? I wonder who would be in that.
Probably your mum, I'd imagine.
My mum, Stephen Best, hosted by Stephen Best, with my mum.
Yeah, and Alan from work.
Maybe yeah. Alan from work.
I mean, I'd listen to that. I would listen to that.
Yeah, we're in trouble.
We definitely are.
I think we're in trouble. Maybe I've given them some ideas there. Yeah, I'm okay, thank you. How are you?
Good, yeah, I'm great. I'm not too bad at all. It's been a good weekend. Chris Woff's here as well. Chris, you all right?
I'm not too bad, thank you. Yes, it was a Newcastle United free weekend in terms of being at live football for me, but obviously from a Newcastle United perspective, their positive momentum has continued given results elsewhere, so it's good to see.
It certainly is. And speaking of positivity, I've got to say well done to my little lad Jackson, who scored a penalty on Saturday for his team. The only reason he was allowed to take said penalty was because I had promised him southern fried chicken for his dinner, and he told the captain this, who promptly handed the ball over to him, which I thought was a lovely touch.
There is a follow-up, as my natural journalistic instincts immediately kick
come
in
on,
here.
I know where this is going. Come on.
And this is quite important, I feel, for our future relationship. Can you describe the penalty, please?
It was placed, but it was twatted into the bottom right corner. The keeper got a touch, but it was too powerful because it had been twatted, and then it went through the net, which was quite exciting.
No further questions. Thank you very much.
I presume you're happy with that.
You've passed the test, yes, thank you.
Good.
Okay. And also on your parenting techniques, that basically you bribe your child with fried food is essentially what you're trying to say, yeah?
Yes, Chris, that's it. It worked,
yeah,
didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Chris, you'll get there. Give it time.
Yeah, come on.
Give it time.
Yeah, have you stopped
feeding sausages?
No, I finally
quinoa and grains and pulses. And
yesterday,
and
James, at the minute, James is going through quite a sort of fussy period where basically anything Alice or I cookie will not eat. But yesterday, I triumphed by managed to make something so bland that he would eat it. So it was like something that tasted literally of nothing, and then he decided to eat it. So that's a triumph for my culinary skills.
Well, there you go. Baby recipes with Chris Woff coming soon to The Athletic. There we are. Right then, the lasses, they did provide us with some association football this weekend, but it would be fair to say a goalless dead rubber against Halifax didn't exactly set the pulses racing like last week, George, did it?
No, not at all. The hard work was done. Obviously, they're up as champions, and there was a nice nice moment before the game started. They got a guard of honour from Halifax, which is very good, and should also wish Super Becky Langley, Newcastle United manager, happy birthday for Sunday.
Absolutely.
But after that, Halifax basically put everyone behind the ball and soaked up a huge amount of pressure, and yeah, Newcastle just didn't break it down. I'm sure Becky would have wanted a win. I'm sure the whole team would have wanted a win. They're in such brilliant form, but it wasn't to be. It was a goalless draw. Sounded like a bit of a dour afternoon, but yeah, as I said, the hard work already done.
Absolutely. Great to see Jordy Bartle back in the side as well after a tough season with injuries. And Sunderland's defeat to Charlton means there will be three North East teams in the Championship next season, and it could be an intriguing little mini-league with Durham, that, Chris, couldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's going to be two rivalries building there. Newcastle, obviously, historically, haven't really had that, certainly with Sunderland, not on the women's side, to have the men's, because they haven't played at that sort of level. But it's something that could really begin to blossom, and given that there isn't that current rivalry on the men's side beyond the FA Cup tie this season, hopefully that is something that can help all North East women's teams push each other on as well, and that's going to be great to see, and it will be. I think there'll be big occasions next season, certainly when Newcastle play Sunderland.
It's fabulous, fabulous that. I mean, you know, we have to pay tribute to Sunderland. They've been hugely influential over the years, not only the level that they've played at, but also the players that have kind of come through Sunderland's system, including a lot of Newcastle's present team now have come through the system. Be great fun, great to have that rivalry. Can already imagine, you know, if Kingston Park can fill out for the game that decided the Championship, it'll be full out, I'm sure, for Sunderland matches. Yeah, very exciting.
Brilliant stuff. And I don't know if you saw it, but Cara Milne Redhead scored an absolute peach of a free kick for Norton as well at the weekend. Newcastle Loney, she just dinked it over the wall, clipped the underside of the bar and went in. If you haven't seen it, check it out on X. It's an absolute pearler.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We can beat you, and we are going to win.
Right then, chaps, let's crack on with some chat about this Crystal Palace game to Selhurst Park, South London, on a midweek evening, obviously, and a very intriguing trip for Eddie Howe's refreshed mags, Chris.
Yes, 10 days without a match for Newcastle United. This is the match that was postponed from before the March at national break because Newcastle had played Manchester City, or were playing Manchester City in the FA Cup, whereas this weekend was because they're meant to be playing Man United, who are in the semi-final of the FA Cup, and so that's why it's worked out that they're going on a Wednesday night to Selhurst Park. I am not going, and neither is George, though. We're not sending George this one. Jacob is actually going to be there. He's going to get a rare outing. He's going to return and put George and I to shame again.
Squad rotation system, and Jacob's come in to do the job that other people don't want to.
It's 5 minutes from his house. So
Doesn't it? Yeah. Makes sense. Crystal Palace, apparently, suddenly the best team in world football. The West Ham result coming after a victory at Anfield looks impressive, although it does sound like the Hammers were very bad indeed. George, Newcastle are going to have to be at the top of the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's West Ham are such a weird team. I mean, it's very difficult to sort of judge their results. I mean, they've had some absolute hammerings in the league this season. And then they sort of somehow find a way to respond. But kind of once again after that defeat, David Moyes is having to answer questions about his own future and was apologising on behalf of his team. Palace, yeah, it's just, I mean, hence Chris and I not going. It's just not one of those places that you particularly want to go to, do you? But and they are they have got those two back-to-back wins. So that's a lot of wins. I mean, at the start of that sentence, they'd only won two games in a row, but by the time I finished, it's actually three or four. So that's not very good news for Newcastle.
No, not at all. Chris, you wanted to talk about our recent history against Palace. It's fair to say it's a complicated story.
Yes, I mean, at St James's Park, Newcastle have a very good record. In recent years, at Selhurst Park, aside from a 2-0 win in the lockdown season when Wilson and Joe Linton scored,
I mean, bundled it in.
Newcastle have drawn quite a few games, but they've also lost a few, and I was there when they went back to face former manager Alan Pardew and lost 5-1. That was a pretty harrowing day. That was in the relegation season under Steve McLaren in 2015-16. And yeah, it's not a ground Newcastle tend to perform particularly well at in recent seasons. I mean, they drew 0-0 last year, maybe slightly unfortunate. But and then the year before, they were absolutely battered when Graham Jones was in charge. And yet Callum Wilson's absolutely wonderful overhead kick rescued a point.
That's right, yeah.
So yeah, it's a bit of a strange ground. But then equally, Palace have gone nearly 500 minutes in the league without scoring against Newcastle home and away. So in that sense, maybe there is some optimism there that Newcastle can get a third successive clean sheet, as it would be, and a second away straight in away games.
You're talking there, Chris, about Newcastle at Palace. But if I dredge back through my memory, which going back literally weeks, we did, if I remember rightly, we stuffed them at home.
That wasn't really weeks, but yes, Newcastle won 4-0 against them. I think it was in October.
Well, it was weeks.
I mean, weeks were involved.
Do you mean it's not weeks?
Yes, Newcastle won 4-0, yeah. That was probably when they won a really good run at that stage in Newcastle. It was probably the last time they had momentum over a sustained period in this season.
That was in the same run of form when they beat PSG and that kind of stuff, wasn't it? Yeah, okay.
Yes.
No, it's good. No, it's true.
It was irrelevant. I was just trying to test my own memory, and I passed with flying colours.
Obviously, that was Roy Hodgson's Palace as well, whereas this is now...
Yes, it's very different.
This is now a different situation, yeah.
And if we are going back in the annals of time, I don't want to give anybody PTSD, but do you remember Emmanuel Riviere scoring there as well?
Do indeed. That was... I mean, he doesn't score many, so... I think he got two, actually. Did he get two?
I think he did. I think one of them was a penalty, I think.
Yeah.
Was that a League Cup game?
Yeah, and then Dummett got the winner in extra time.
That's right, Paul Dummett, he did. They do have some decent attacking talent, though, don't they? Eze and Elise obviously are ripping it up. I saw this week in the news that Arsenal were considering a $165 million double swoop for Alexander Isak and Elise, and I thought, that's a bargain, £5 million for Elise. surely he's worth more than that.
Does it count as a double swoop if there are different clubs as well? Is that a sort of...
No.
Surely not. I mean, they are the Eagles, though, aren't they? So they do kind of swoop.
And Magpies, I suppose you've got both birds. So yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose if that was all Arsenal did in the transfer market this summer, could you say that in the transfer market this summer, Arsenal pulled off a double swoop for? I mean, but I think it does. I think it sort of... this is one for Football Cliches podcast, really, isn't it? Not ours. But a double swoop does sort of imply from the same club.
Could it be a twin swoop? It might be a twin swoop.
Could it be a double... could it be a pivot swoop? Could it be a swooping pivot?
Can you tell there's not been a lot of football played recently? We haven't got an awful lot to talk about this week. Anyway, Chris, are we expecting any kind of difference in approach for Palace and what we saw against Spurs? Obviously, Eddie Howe deployed that bespoke system. There's players playing in all kinds of different positions. I would imagine it might be a little bit more straightforward against Palace.
Just on when you mentioned Lise and Eze, I mean, they were brilliant against West Ham. They're also brilliant at Liverpool, and I think they've only started together two or three times this season, and if you speak to anyone who watches Palace a lot, they will tell you that Palace are a completely different proposition when the two of them start together. They're two players who Newcastle like a lot as well and have watched over sort of many years. So the system for Spurs was bespoke for that match, and it was partly to do as well with the personnel who Eddie Howe had available. Now, if he's got more options on Wednesday, then he may revert. Also, the fact that we know longer term he has preferred a 4-3-3. That is the system he usually plays. I'm sort of caught in two minds as to what exactly he will do. I mean, it's interesting, and I fall into this trap as well, but I've heard a lot of people talking about, the system worked so well against Spurs that Newcastle should do that against Palace. And it's like...
It's horses. It's got to be horses for courses.
Yeah, you've also got to remember that it's different opposition. It's a very different style of play. I mean, Palace had, I think, 60-odd% possession against West Ham, but equally, they're not necessarily a possession-based side so much. They might not want to have the ball as much as necessarily Spurs wanted the
ball. Away from home as well.
It's away from home. Palace probably aren't going to play quite as high a line as Spurs as well. So I don't think that it'll be a complete reversion to maybe the way that they started against Fulham, where it just clearly didn't work and they had to sort of grind it out. I think Eddie Howe will try to go in and make sure Newcastle early on are far more compact than they were against Fulham away from home, and make sure they stay in the game, because Palace were 3-0 up after 20 minutes against West Ham, and they clearly have confidence right now. But I think that you're likely to see more of a... I would be surprised if it isn't a 4-3-3 or something, a variation of that. I think that you probably will revert to that anyhow, because I think that that's what he wants to do longer term, and if he has more options, that's what I would expect to see.
So we've had 11 days or so after the win over Spurs, George. It's good news generally, isn't it? You would hope that some of that squad would be refreshed and ready to go again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure once you've had a win like that, you know, you kind of want to get back out there pretty much as quickly as possible. But no, it's the one thing that Eddie Howe hasn't had a lot of this season and has craved. It's time on the training pitch. You know, Chris has just talked there about the system that they play against Palace. There's no excuse for sort of not having the right system for this game, because they've had plenty of time to practice it, albeit they had a couple of days of downtime after Spurs. So they should be absolutely fresh, ready to go. Palace have had a game this weekend, so you would expect Newcastle to be fully focused and ready to go. And I think the thing is, they do have that momentum that Chris was talking about now, and you know, that's just a great thing to have, probably, like me in this sentence.
Full of energy this morning, aren't you, George?
It's Monday morning. What do you want from me?
It's been a long season, hasn't it? It's been a long season.
It has been a really long season, yeah. It's been a long podcast.
With that break, Chris, can we expect anybody's back? There's been a rare sighting of Callum Wilson in training this week. Is Kieran Trippier any closer? And also, more importantly, has anybody picked up anything? Are we likely to lose anybody new?
I haven't heard of Newcastle picking up any further injuries, but equally, this is the season of injuries, so I'm not gonna completely discount that as a possibility. Lewis Hall and Tino Livramento have been training as well, and obviously they weren't fit enough to start against Spurs, so they will come into the equation for if Newcastle certainly do revert to a conventional back four. In terms of Kieran Trippier, he was initially meant to be back immediately after the March international break. Then he was meant to be back for Palace. I think it's touch and go. I don't think it's certain that he will be involved in the game, and Newcastle aren't going to take any risks with him. But he will want to play ahead of, obviously, the summer and the Euros as well as for Newcastle. Callum Wilson, I think there is a decent chance he could make the bench back in training again. Newcastle aren't going to push him too soon. But what he's been able to do is, because it was an upper body injury, he has actually been training in terms of shooting and kicking and the like for a good couple of weeks now. And so this is the first time over the last week that he's actually been involved in sort of the more physical side with other players as well. So I think there's a chance that he could be involved, if not this Wednesday, then this weekend. And that's big for Newcastle, because it gives them as good a form as Alexander Isak is in. It will be nice, certainly when Newcastle have two games, and they've got a couple of times where they're going to be playing midweek as well between now and the end of the season, if they could rotate things a little bit and give him a little bit of a rest, and hopefully have Callum Wilson come back, and he'll be desperate to prove a point given all the headlines Isak's been getting.
Yeah, an angry and hungry Callum Wilson coming off the bench is what you want to see, isn't it? Michael R as well, Chris, he sent us an email and he said, where is Matt Target? Which sounds like he owes him money, but and he also asked, when is Nick Pope due back as well? Have we got any news on those two?
Well, Matt Target briefly came back onto the bench, I think it was at Chelsea, after he'd been out for a sustained period with the hamstring injury picked up at Manchester United in the Carabao Cup in November. But he has suffered an Achilles problem, and he was pictured in a boot at St. James, like a protective boot at St. James, at the training ground about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago for Joe Linton's signing of his contract. He was in that video. Oh, yes, so I don't think we're going to see much of him between now and the end of the season, unfortunately. He's just had a torrid time of injuries. There was also a question about Nick Pope, when he would be back. Again, sort of talking about the end of April, start of May, but they're being very, very cautious with Pope, because they want to make sure that, again, the shoulder is fully healed before he comes back into things. So I think that we're probably still a week or two away from Nick Pope, but equally I'm probably going to have egg on my face when Eddie Howe comes out on Tuesday and says he's going to start. Well, actually, no, Howe wouldn't say that. When we see the team sheet on Wednesday night and Nick Pope's in goal.
He hasn't trained so far, Chris.
Yeah.
But he is in the starting 11, yeah. We won't be seeing Joe Wilk anytime soon either, will we? Probably not for the rest of this season.
No, and in some ways it feels like he's been put out of his misery a little bit. It's just been an awful, awful season for him in terms of injuries. We know he missed out at the start of the season, came back in sort of November and played a couple of matches. Obviously wasn't right, and then has come back again, but again hasn't been firing up on all cylinders at all, and then has now succumbed to this Achilles injury. And yeah, you just hope that that now gives him a chance to get some proper rest and rehab and then go again next season. I mean, we've seen a little glimpse of it. We know what an important player he is and just haven't seen that, you know, that midfield presence. So many other players have been out, of course, as well in that area.
He is.
But he's a great player. He offers a threat. He has that direct running. He's got that box-to-box skill. He can link up the team. Really important. And just hope that he gets a full summer to recover and then be back at it in August, because he's a big miss.
He is. It's such a shame because he was playing, I think, the best football I've ever seen him play in a black and white shirt at the back end of last season in the run into the Champions League qualification. He was just fabulous. He couldn't get near him. And it's such a shame that he hasn't played more football this season.
Come on, you Maggies.
Speaking of a chase for a European place, it's never been simple to process or decode, but it really is quite impenetrable now, isn't it, Georgia? We need City to win the Cup and to finish at least sixth. And then there's lots of different caveats going on with other teams as well. It's all over the place.
Yeah, it's incredibly complicated. I mean, the bigger picture is that if Newcastle finish sixth, they're in Europe. And so that has to be the target, six or above. Beyond that, it does then become much more complicated, and it depends on who wins what, where Newcastle are. You know, you could finish seventh or eighth and not get into Europe. So the target for Newcastle has to be to do it on their own terms and to try and finish sixth or above, because then they're guaranteed it.
Yeah, the Europa League would be a lovely little jaunt for fans as well. Or would we quite like a tilt at the Conference League, Chris? It's worked nicely for Villa this year and provided a wonderful night for West Ham as well last season.
It has. I mean, Newcastle just have to focus on finishing as high as they possibly can, and then they can see which one of those that they drop into. I mean, any sort of European football, given the position Newcastle were in 2 months ago, I think would be a huge achievement. And certainly if they finish top six,
yeah,
given all of the travails of this season and how challenging it's been, I think that would be a huge success. Now, in terms of the picture for sixth, as I mentioned at the start of the podcast, over the weekend, things improved drastically. So West Ham, who were ahead of Newcastle in sixth place until Newcastle basically beat them a couple of weeks ago, they are now down in eighth and have played two matches more than Newcastle and are 2 points behind them. Newcastle are ahead of Man United on goal difference, haven't played the same number of games, but they go to Man United, they go to Old Trafford, so still have to play one another. And then the other team who are really in contention now in terms of just being behind Newcastle are Chelsea in ninth, who have got 47 points, three behind Newcastle, but they've got a game in hand. So Chelsea alongside Newcastle are one of the form teams in the Premier League. Well, I think Newcastle are second or third in the form table, so that in itself is a real positive.
We always used to make jokes about the race for ninth with Newcastle back in the day, but it is actually quite an intriguing competition because, you know, all three of those teams are so inconsistent. I mean, if it's Newcastle, Man U and Chelsea. Now, for Newcastle, you would say there's been very good reasons for that inconsistency. But, like, Man U, you saw at the weekend that cup game against Coventry. I mean, absolutely all over the place. And Chelsea, you just don't know what you're going to get. So you would think that sort of a consistent run of results and form could really give Newcastle the edge with that. But, as long as they have the players to do it.
Chelsea's next game is Arsenal away, so you wouldn't put money on that one either, would you?
No, and by the way, we're talking about which European competition you like to be in. I mean, it's definitely a first world problem, but you sort of think about how fated our team from 1969 is, the Intercity Fairs Cup team. You know, that is our last trophy as a club, our last European trophy, and the people who played in that. In that competition, in that final, sort of fated as heroes. It's a competition that doesn't exist anymore. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, give us the easiest competition possible. If Man City aren't in it, then Newcastle have got a good chance of winning it. If West Ham can win a trophy, then Newcastle can win a trophy. I mean, I'm not like being facetious about that or trying to downplay that achievement. The vital thing is that Newcastle have a squad that is big enough and robust enough to cope with Europe next season. I mean, that is that's the big thing. If they do, you know, I think the beauty of a competition like the Conference League is that it allows teams to rotate in early games, and that's just a luxury that Eddie Howe's not had this season.
And it gives fans a chance to visit some far-flung corners of Europe on unbelievable away day adventures as well. So that would be fabulous. So a big story broke on the other side of the Tyne this week. Gateshead FC thought they had a chance of making it to the Football League, having qualified for the playoffs in the National League. However, the EFL are currently denying them that place. Gateshead started the season with former Newcastle centre-half Mike Williamson as manager. And when he left for Milton Keynes, goalkeeper Rob Elliott took over and steered them into the playoff places. Now, the EFL say Gateshead do not meet the criteria required for promotion, so cannot take part. Problem stems from Gateshead Council's inability to agree a 10-year tenancy with the club and a bit of uncertainty about the future ownership of Gateshead Stadium. Chris, this sounds like a sticky situation for Gateshead.
Yeah, I mean, just briefly to cover, you mentioned Mike Williamson was the former manager. He'd been there for a few seasons. He obviously, Gateshead have been in a very difficult situation a few years ago when they very nearly went out of business. They were relegated to the National League North. Mike Williamson eventually took them up out of the National League North, and they played some very, very nice football at that level. Were doing well before he left for MK Dons. But then Rob Elliott, the former Newcastle goalkeeper, remains, I think, technically Gateshead's technical director, but he was put in interim charge, but he is basically now the manager, and he's actually taken them on to another level. And despite having one of, if not the lowest budget in the National League, so that's the fifth tier of English football, Gateshead have managed to finish sixth in the league and should be taking part in the playoffs, as you mentioned. Now, we're speaking at 10 to 11 on Monday morning. As you say, they were due to initially play tomorrow night, Tuesday night. They are appealing the decision. They're trying to find out if they can actually play in these matches. But as things stand, they're not going to be allowed to. No other team is going to be allowed to enter the playoffs instead of them. And this is a club who haven't been in the Football League since 1960 when they were voted out. That was before there was automatic promotion and relegation from the Football League.
Crazy that, isn't it? Yeah. Voted out.
Exactly. And I know there was a lot of disquiet about how that all came about anyway, but they've often struggled for exposure given Newcastle and Sunderland in such close proximity and being such massive clubs. But since the 70s, they've played at Gateshead at National Stadium. It's where they still play, and seemingly whatever assurances the Football League require, Gateshead Council haven't been able to provide them. Now, I always find it frustrating. I mean, we're in a PSR world as well, where we talk about financial issues in football, but also when there's a sort of technicality that prevents someone from being able to actually fulfil their obligation. Basically, on field, Gateshead have earned the right to be able to have the opportunity to go up.
Absolutely.
And yet, an off-field technicality is preventing them. And that, what I think, is a huge frustration, because it would be wonderful for them to have that opportunity. They are going to Wembley next month regardless. Back-to-back FA Trophy finals. They got their last season and lost, but they play Solihull Moors on the 11th of May. But they should be able to play on Tuesday night. And it's just hugely disappointing that it looks at the moment like they're going to have that chance deprived from them.
It's shambolic, and honestly, it's disgraceful that it happens now, that it only comes now 2 days, 3 days before they're due to play this playoff game. I mean, it's been an astonishing achievement from everybody at the club to get to where they are. As Chris said, gone through that kind of potted history. It's just been a brilliant story, and the people that suffer from this, as always in these matters, are the fans, but also the players and the team and the staff who've worked such wonders. And it just sort of reading the statements on Sunday from the EFL, from Gateshead themselves, and then from the council, they're all saying that they tried to, you know, that they worked together. That was, you know, they're sort of eschewing responsibility for this, but collectively, it is an absolute failure of leadership, where everyone's saying that there's a will for this to happen and it still hasn't been able to happen. And I just think it's absolutely shocking and should not be happening 3 days before they're due to play their first playoff game. I hope it doesn't rob them of momentum ahead of the FA Trophy final, because again, that's, you know, that's been a brilliant achievement to get there. And just what a shame. What a shame. What a shambles.
And plenty of Newcastle United connections over the years as well with Gateshead. It can only be healthy for North East football to have as many of our clubs doing as well as possible. So we'll keep an eye on that one. And good luck to Rob Elliott and all the rest of the Gateshead boys and girls.
Just quickly picking up on that, Taylor, I mean, someone who will really support what you've just said there is Paul Dummett. You speak to Paul Dummett about early on in his career,
yes,
and he talks about going on loan to Gateshead and that some of his Newcastle reserve teammates or youth teammates at the time almost laughed at him for going there. And yet he went there, played senior men's football, and then eventually got his opportunity under Alan Pardew because he'd had that experience previously. And that's what Newcastle want, and Sunderland really, all clubs want a strong Gateshead, because then that you can have those players out on loan close by, playing, as I say, this really, really exciting style of football, a good possession-based football as Gateshead are playing at the moment. And so, yes, it would be in everyone's interest, I think, really, if you could have a thriving Gateshead.
100%. Right then, let's finish things off, chaps. Jacob's going to be on the show on Thursday after his little trip to Palace. And his Garang Kuol update is live. Check that out as well. Meanwhile, Feyenoord won the Dutch Cup despite a red card for Yankuba Minter in the final. That's not what you want, that is it? A red card in a final of a cup competition. But not to worry, I'm sure he's still doing brilliantly over there. Right then, get in touch at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X, and email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. That is just about that, George. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
You're very welcome, indeed.
And thank you for your time as well, Chris.
You're very, very welcome. Hopefully we'll be chatting on Thursday when Newcastle have extended their unbeaten run.
Hopefully so, yes, absolutely. Thank you very much for listening out there as well from everybody at Pod on the Tyne. Have a lovely couple of days till we speak to you next. Goodbye.
The Athletic.